Welcome, one and all, with your host, Rolando, and his co-host, John. We are the Skeleton Boys.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
Slash John.
And welcome to the show. This week, we'll review Deadly Blessing. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. I'll give my first thoughts. And we'll go to a deep spoiler analysis. So if we sound any different, it's because I have a guest with me today.
A live guest.
A live guest. This is super weird.
Not a dead guest. We haven't done something like this in... 4 or 5 years?
That's generous. Let's
back in the heyday of Drunk Comic Book Society.
Yeah, so John is actually live here in Skeleton Boy Studio. So
we're drinking some brews.
Yeah.
Hanging with the animals.
Got a microphone between us, and we're gonna talk some horror with you guys today.
We're gonna talk all about horrors tonight.
So if it sounds any different, if it sounds any weirder, there's definitely, we're doing things differently. So.
Yeah. I mean, if it sounds strange,
especially if I get this close, then it's not weird at all.
Don't worry about it. Everything's fine. We're not drunk, by the way. Everything's cool.
I think this is going to be a separate show going forward. I don't know how comfortable I'm just going to be like what I've been saying. Like, I don't know how comfortable I am talking movies in front of you, even though I've done it for most of our friendship. Yeah, we so
casually do this when we podcast about it.
Yeah.
But to be fair, we started this during lockdown.
True.
And then
true.
It just became a continuous thing because our schedules are very, sporadic.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we kind of like plan to do it on a Saturday night and everything. So this is going to be a fun one. This is going to be interesting. A different one. Yeah.
We're doing a Wes Craven classic.
Yeah. K-drama.
Beloved.
K-drama.
Very well known movie.
Yeah.
Everybody's heard of it. Everybody's seen it.
Yeah.
Nobody knows this movie. Deadly Blessings.
Did not know this movie existed.
No, fuck no. Until we were like fucking around with Scream.
That's true. Yeah.
And we're like, what is this?
Yeah, I thought it went Last House on the Left, you know, Hills Have Eyes, Nightmare on Elm Street. But no, that is not the case at all.
People Under the Stairs, which I keep telling people, like, that's my favorite Wes Craven film. And they're like, what's that? I'm like, oh my God. There's a dude in a gimp suit.
Yeah.
He's going around trying to murder kids. Like, how do you not know this movie?
So, yes. So, but first, before we get to our main review, we're going to talk a little TV. We're doing All of Us Are Dead.
Yes.
K-drama.
Do we continue this one?
Okay, that's interesting. So All of Us Are Dead is a Netflix show, right? And it's in a high school. Very, very K-drama. Right?
Yeah, it's not horrible.
You know, I'll say I could totally pass on the K-drama, but I actually kind of dug the horror elements of it.
Yeah, I agree. But they're like an hour long, so most of it is K-drama.
Yeah, like that's the part that worries me. Yeah.
And I'm not, like, I like K-drama, but I'm also like, it feels like two separate things that they try to, like, marry together.
Yeah.
You can feel the difference between, like, what's going on? I don't know. It's okay. I'm not sure. It feels like a very good background show to watch while you do stuff.
But are we going to do it for 12 weeks?
12 hours just gone. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a...
I mean, I feel like we kind of forced Archive 81...
I think it kind of seemed, looking back, it kind of seemed like we were enjoying what we were watching, but then we were waiting for that thing to just click and that thing to just like propel it to be like, this is the show we love, this is the show we're going to watch. But it never happened.
No, until the ending, I was like, oh, what a solid ending. That made sense.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. It was fucking stupid.
Okay.
Yeah, we were disappointed overall, I think, with the show. I never really went any higher than where it was supposed to.
Yeah. Also, full disclosure, it'd be really funny if me going that up close to the mic, there's no difference at all. Dude. Just like your visual of me being a jackass going like, oh, blah, 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 I'm doing something fun.
Yeah, no. I think that all intents and purposes, I think All of Us Are Dead did a really good, for a first episode, it did a good job establishing everybody, establishing relationships. We meet a host of young kids. We meet the incurring reason why there's a breakout in zombies,
yeah,
per se, right?
That part's kind of fun. The bully aspect is a little heavy-handed.
Yeah, yeah.
They really want you to know they're bullies by making sure you know pretty much every 10 minutes as they bully somebody else.
Right,
yeah. Which is kind of annoying, but...
I don't dislike any of these characters.
No, I don't either. Yeah, that's true.
But I don't... The thing that's, I think, wearing us off is that the K-drama element's going to be kind of weird, right? They're going to go hard on that because it's definitely teenagers. This is definitely like a teenage-aimed show. This isn't like Battle Royale where it was like kids, but it was like adult-themed content.
Well, I'm waiting for it to actually turn into that because clearly... this infection is going to start happening quick because quick spoiler, the end of it, like shit hits the fan real quick.
Right.
So everybody's trying to get infected. We're waiting to see like these kids deal with these adult situations as like most of these kids are like bullies and just been like coddled, I guess. So but the thing is like, I'm not sure if I'm willing put in that much time to see this unfold, I guess.
Because I mean, when we saw Train to Busan 2, that was our biggest like thing we didn't like, was the sort of soap opera drama elements of the end.
This wasn't okay. So this show, to be fair, is not as hard as that. But yeah,
no. But yeah, you kind of sense that's where we're going.
Yeah,
I think this is skewed a little younger, but I think there's still elements that can be enjoyed by everybody.
Yeah.
Right? Because, I mean, the...
It's not enough honestly, nudity, but yeah.
Yeah. Anytime they ratcheted up the horror aspects, I was like, yeah, dude, I'm in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But...
Like the girl being chained to, you know, because she's infected and, like, the dad who, I guess, killed his son, right? I'm assuming that's who that guy was.
Yeah.
Because he was infected and I guess he infected himself with something, which I haven't explained yet. So he would be able to fight these bullies. Didn't work in his favor because he got thrown off the roof of a building.
Yeah. That was a very odd way to start the movie.
Yes.
It just threw you in.
It's right? very, I think I was trying to get us to watch Train to Busan had an animated, film. Mm-hmm. That was similar to that, but it was like a little too, I didn't enjoy it all that much, but it was very similar, like in the city. And I like when they do that because, to be frank, we're American, right? So we're not used to that type of city.
Right.
So it's like fun to see that, you know,
I don't know. True. Yeah.
But who's to say if they actually hang out on rooftops, maybe they're not allowed and they're just like shitty kids on rooftops. I don't know.
Yeah. It was kind of an odd way to start the show because it just throws you in there, but it does it quickly. Once the events of the show starts, I mean, we quickly meet our main characters and the dynamics of the school and the relationships of characters, who likes who.
Yeah,
there's triangles. We got all kinds of like teenage angst everywhere.
I'm actually trying to figure out who the main characters are actually going to be here.
Well, for sure, it's the neighbor kids. I wish.
What that girl got scratched, so she. Potentially
she definitely could be infected, yeah.
And overprotective friend who I don't think actually really loves her. So I'm a little confused.
He likes her. I think he did. He didn't like her.
I'm trying to figure that one out.
But it's the classic. I think it's the classic. I think it's because a lot of these relationships are very on the surface in terms of setup.
Yeah.
It's very guy likes girl, guy doesn't tell girl, girl likes other guy.
I guess
they're
for me,
just circles of friends.
He didn't feel like a ducky character from like 16 Candles.
No, but he, yeah, but I feel like he's
Pretty in Pink. I'm always fucked that up, but
yeah. No, Pretty in Pink's, yeah, Pretty in Pink's ducky, right? Yeah, no, you're right.
Okay.
Sidetrack. Ducky should have gotten her because that's the John Hughes structure, right?
Like, yeah.
The
but I think John Hughes was like, let's be realistic about this one fucking thing.
One
like,
fucking movie.
Of course Ducky would not get the girl. Like,
actually, that movie hits harder because Ducky doesn't get the girl.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I think it's more realistic.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It's not like, I know John Hughes is like fantastical about a lot of things, but I feel like the ends are always like somewhat realistic.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. R.I.P.
Rest in power.
John Hughes. Who we never knew was a racist and a homophobe.
I mean, Long Duck Dong or what is it? True, yeah. Come on. Yeah. He did not shy away from stereotypes. Or from the low-hanging joke. John Hughes is not afraid of the low-hanging joke.
Maybe he thought he was doing an Asian guy a solid.
No, but in all honesty, I think I was actually going to say that. Where do you think the show, should we give it a couple of episodes or should we give it, or should we just like say veto it now? Take a vote.
I don't know.
On what we want to do with this. Because there are things I wouldn't, like I said, I don't think there's anything I actively disliked.
That's true. Yeah.
But I think that the way they set dressed the relationships was nothing that I haven't seen in a million other, you know, teenage aim shows or movies.
I think we should give it, even though like I don't want to personally, I think we should give it a couple more episodes because it is a first episode.
Okay.
I feel like it's unfair to like judge a series by like the first episode.
What do you think is fair? Like, that's something we should probably, like, I'll throw it in the group chat. What do you think is a fair amount of time to spend on a TV show? Like, I did,
I think, like, three episodes, I think, is a solid number.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, like, honestly, Archive 81, after the third episode, I was kind of like, we should probably fucking ditch this.
Well, this is the first time.
And I was right. No,
but no, you're, yeah. As we fill out TV Quarter, maybe we gotta, like, just, you know, that was our first, like, time seeing through a show, so maybe now we can like judge it.
Either we do this or we just start working on the original Twilight Zone, I guess, and just watch every episode.
No, yeah, that might be worth it.
And spend years doing that so we can watch Mickey Rooney play a small guy and be angry about being small. That was a great episode.
Okay, so why don't we just give it, why don't we do that? Why don't we give it three episodes? We'll give it three episodes, we'll feel it out.
It might be fucking great. I don't know.
It might be.
It's
it might change. It might be that there's always that thing that like turns on a TV show. So it might happen in three.
Because I'm always wary about like, oh, this has been like in the top 10 for Netflix for a while. I'm like, that doesn't mean shit to me anymore. Like there's a lot of shitty shows that are top 10 all the time.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But Witcher. I do enjoy Witcher, in case people are curious.
No, it's a solid show.
Yeah.
It's
a really solid show.
Henry Cavill. Ugh.
So, like all of us
are not attractive enough yet. Maybe have a gravelly voice.
So we'll feel it out. We'll try it. We'll go week by week.
Yeah.
And we'll figure out where we want to go next. Look at other stuff to watch. There's always stuff to watch.
Yeah, we should dig up like fucking Freddy's Nightmare TV series. Where the fuck should we watch that?
Oh, I did.
It's bad.
It's very, very 90s. Very, very
that's
ABC's 1990s TV produced show.
Holy shit. Okay, so we should watch it. Got it.
No. No, I don't think so. Yeah, no, I don't know. I did, real quick, like a Freddy's Nightmares is what you're talking about, right?
Yes, there you go.
So I did get Screambox for a little bit. It's on Scream. They have a 30-day free trial. And I thought that if you hear rustling, that's John getting a beer. By the way, we can't hide. There's no illusions anymore.
Trying my best. Trying my best here. That's nothing. I farted.
Yeah. It's gassy. Get the window open.
You're not drinking beer. It's totally gas. That's totally less totally embarrassing.
Gas, yeah.
No, I shit myself. I wasn't drinking beer. I promise.
But I saw the first episode because they talk about how it's an origin story for Freddy.
Oh, no.
Okay. And so I saw it and it is very, very, very TV 1990s.
Does it look like it's shot on VHS?
Yes. 100%. There is no.
Awesome.
There's no like HD version of this stuff. So it's a little rough.
I did enjoy it, by the way. So Deadly Blessings, I rented this movie twice because I didn't finish it.
You didn't watch it on Tubi?
No, I thought about it, but I was like, I don't want to do it with commercials. So I just want to go straight through because
commercials help. Commercials do help on this movie.
I was mentioning that the job I'm on right now is it's kind of taxing. So I just want to get through these things as quick as possible. Yeah, so I spent
too much.
$8 in general to watch this movie, yeah. Which I could have just bought it, but I don't want to own it. I'm not saying anything about it. I'm just saying, like, I just didn't want to own this movie.
Yeah, it's tough owning digital movies. Yeah, it's a weird thing, right?
I keep forgetting. I'm like, oh, should I rent this? And I'm like, wait a second. I think I own this. Which recently I accidentally bought the fucking new Spider-Man movie. I thought I was renting it.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And I bought it.
I think on the 12th it's like rentable. We're waiting for the 12th. I told Candy to like, it came out and I was telling her like, should we just buy it? Fuck it. Let's just buy it. And she's like, nah. I mean, I told her like, it's available to rent on the 12th. It's like, we've already waited this long. Let's just wait until we're
weeks. Well, I thought that was a rental price. I was also, full disclosure, incapacitated with several substances, just two of them, but like, you know, and I was like, yeah, okay, I'll rent this fucking movie. I need to watch it. Finally, I, rent it, quote unquote, rent it. I watch it. I'm like, God, that was wonderful. Maybe I should watch it again before my rental's up. And I'm trying to like click on it. Like, where's my rentals? And then I look at my library and like the movies you own. I'm like, oh, fuck, I fucking bought it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I can watch it as many times as I want now.
All forever. For as long as you want.
Because according to like my library, I'm a huge Tom Holland fan now because I keep accidentally buying the fucking Spider-Man movies. It's not a horrible thing, but you know.
Well, lately what I've been doing, I've been trying to look at Movie of the Week, the 99 cent Apple Movie of the Week. I've gotten some pretty good rentals out of that. I did Titan.
Oh, I need to watch that. It's on Hulu now, I think.
Yeah. Fucking so good, dude.
I actually was recently talking to a friend online and she was like, such a weird movie. I'm like, oh my God, I fucking love Raw, so I want to watch this movie.
No, it's a really excellent movie. And I rented a Western with Tim Blake Nelson. Old Henry.
Oh, I've heard of this film. It was good?
Yes. You don't know the secret about it, right?
No.
There's a secret. I literally, after watching it and seeing the big reveal, I was like, fuck yeah. That was, nice. I did this. You can't see, okay. No, the audience can't see this, but I like put my fist in the air because I was so, like, dude, it was like a hit.
Jersey Shore level pump right there.
Yeah. It was a deep pump. Cause fist like, bump, yeah. They have a twist. I don't want to call it a twist, but they do a reveal of, to kind of briefly explain. Owen Henry is about a guy with the past, and a bag of money shows up and some lawmen, quote unquote, show up. Things happen.
When did this movie come out?
It came out this year. Last year. And
who's the main actor?
Tim Blake Nelson.
Oh yeah.
Tim Blake Nelson, and the reveal on... I'm just going to say that there's a reveal on Tim Blake Nelson, dude. I was just like, could not believe what they did. It was beautiful. It was great. It was absolutely one of my favorite things. So that's like my thing now. Like I like going to Apple and seeing what they have for that. That's like, I could pay a dollar. It's cool. Rent it for a dollar. And you get,
I've gotten to that point too. I'm like, I can spend like $6 for whatever the fuck.
You spent like $8 on a movie. Look at you. Mm. Deadly Blessings.
Just doing that stripper money, pull the ones away.
Yeah, look at you. You got the gun, the stripper flying ones gun. I don't know if I'm describing it.
I'm good for it, you know.
No, but all right, we can go move over to our main review of Deadly Blessings. John?
Deadly Blessings.
Do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
Yes, I do. And I've got some hopefully good ones. I was babysitting while I wrote these. So
okay.
And while I was writing them, I kept getting, so my nephew calls me Tio Johns. He's like, Tio Johns, this and that. And I'm like, hey, yeah. Hold on. Let me write this down real quick. But Tio Johns, yes. Hey, like, as I was trying to write each of these, like, Tio Johns, hey. I'm like, oh, yes. Yes, sir. These things are very interesting. Minecraft cartoon for kids is very interesting.
Yeah.
Totally care what's going on the screen. All right.
For Johnny's 5-word plot summaries, coming in at number 3, LA hipster gentrifies Amish. Oh, I can't read my own handwriting. That was, again, I was trying to write this as fast as I could while I was getting distracted. But yeah, LA hipster gentrifies Amish.
Or Ernest Borgnine, it was the hipster in this.
Yes.
Okay.
Coming in at number 2, bunch of simps keep dying.
<That's> pretty good.
And coming in at number 1, what the hell's going on?
All right, that's it. That's all I got.
What the hell's going on? That's not bad. That's not bad. So Deadly Blessings.
Because you get through the whole movie, you're like, oh, okay, interesting. And then the end happens.
So this is a lesser known Wes Craven movie. Yeah. Let's say that.
Probably for good reason.
But so this happened early in his career. So this, I want to pull up the timeline. I think it is important to kind of chronicle where he was at this point.
1981.
Yeah. So let me pull up my notes, quote unquote. This is very early. So he's coming off of pretty much The Hills Have Eyes, and he did a teen movie called Summer of Fear. And he did Deadly Blessings soon after.
So what do I say about this film right off the bat? If you want my first thoughts.
Yes.
It's definitely not a good movie. But it is a very entertaining movie.
So, yeah. I think that I think this is an interesting movie to look back, because Wes Craven is, you know, not only he, in my opinion, he picked up where Hitchcock left off, right? Like right. He identified himself with the genre so deeply, yeah. Right? And he even like put himself in movies, and I would say maybe less this new generation, but our generation, everybody knows who Wes Craven is. Everybody knows who he is, who he looks like. We know what he's done. You know what I mean? We know that he did. I don't think it's can be stressed enough how big of a hit Nightmare on Elm Street is.
Well, how big of an influence he is in horror films in general.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like you said, Hills Have Eyes. Nightmare on Elm Street series, like pretty much the entire series except for the newest one, which was also old at this point because that movie sucked. But, you know, you got People Under the Stairs, which I'm surprised a lot of people don't know about.
Right.
You got Scream, fucking Scream series. And let me just look at my notes real quick.
That's why I compare him to like Hitchcock, because Hitchcock identified him so much. Hitchcock was a big mainstream director. Like he had event films before event films. Like everybody knew who he was. He had a brand. And I think that's what I'm trying to say. Like Wes Craven was a brand, right? Shocker. Like everybody knew who he was. So this, I think it's really interesting to look at this movie that's a little less known. He's not
real quick, fully developed. I didn't say Last House on the Left, and that's important. A super important film.
No, that's actually probably one of my favorite films. Yeah, it's a very really like mean, dirty movie.
And like it's like people love Korean revenge films. That's like,
no, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, like the OG sort of revenge film.
That's a great comparison. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I've heard that comparison before. That's a really good comparison. Cause I think that it's, again, like he was a brand. Wes Craven is a brand. You go to a Wes Craven movie, everybody knew who he was.
Yeah.
Because of Nightmare on Elm Street. Right. I think that kind of defines who the cultural impact he had on films. So it's really fun to go look at a film where he's still figuring it out. Like, he's a new director. Like, he's like four movies in. He's made two movies independently, right? Hills Have Eyes, Last House on the Left. He did a TV movie now. Haven't seen it. And now he's doing like another feature, his first kind of feature outside of it. And that's why I find it so fascinating, because you can look at this movie and you can see that the guy clearly has a deep command of the horror that he's making and directing.
Yes.
But the script is everywhere.
I want to say it's so low budget.
Right.
It's ridiculously low budget.
He's still figuring out his craft, and it's so amazing. I think sometimes we put individuals on pedestals, right? We put like Orson Welles, we put these big directors on pedestals who can do no wrong. And it's really, for me personally, I think it's really fun to go look at guys, go deep into a guy's filmography, or girls, you know, women or directors in general, to look at their filmographies and just figure out like where the stuff comes out. Cause you can clearly see so many influences that he took from this movie.
Yeah.
And he applied it later on to, and where he's still honing his craft, but he's applying stuff. Literally shots he does in this movie appear in Nightmare on Elm Street.
You're right. Right.
Yeah.
Which is interesting too, because like, I think it's like he did a kind of reverse thing where he was like a little bit bad, not bad, but like he was still trying to figure shit out. And then his movies got progressively like way better, which you don't really see nowadays. Like, cause the norm is like people make like a really good series of movies and then they become Quentin Tarantino. So, you know, that makes a bunch of shit movies. Sorry, everybody at home.
Yeah. I want to come up with another example where a director isn't fully formed, but is.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like for a while there, Wes Craven and Clive Barker were like hand in hand.
Okay.
You know, doing their thing, like not necessarily together, but they like helped each other. And it's interesting that like, you know, Wes Craven like really fucking took off and like figured it out.
I have an odd way to describe it. My opinion, like, I've been a huge Wes Anderson fan. You look at Bottle Rocket.
Yeah.
All his touchstones are there, right?
Yeah.
The idiosyncratic humor.
Oh, and I got a good one
too. The acting, the writing, it's all kind of there, but it's low budget. He hasn't quite figured out that the visual flair to add to all this, all the things that he's doing with the script.
Right.
And then his next movie, which I think was Rushmore, right? Rushmore, he does that, and he's already kind of like, he's almost fully formed, and you kind of see him growing in each film into where he is today.
Yeah. He also had the Owen brothers, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It probably helped a lot.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I was just talking to a good friend of mine who I did a mini Fratterday with yesterday. And if people at home don't know what that is, it means I had a late call Friday because I work in film, right? And that meant I was going to bleed into Saturday morning, even if it means like 1 a.m. But my friend, Jesus, was asking me what my favorite horror films are. Which, like, at this point is kind of like, oh, man, what the fuck do I say now? We've been watching so many horror films. But I still got, like, my top three at least. And I'm always like, yeah, for sure, Evil Dead 2 is my favorite horror film. He's like, well, I don't know what that is. I'm like, oh, fuck. So I started talking about it. And then I go like, yeah, Army of Darkness was, like, the first time Sam Raimi, who did, like, you know, the original fucking Spider-Man trilogy that everybody like loves because there's just so like they were groundbreaking at the time. I mean, they're still great in my opinion. And I started telling him, like, yeah, you know, like, these movies aren't perfect, but it was like a labor of love and they took a long time to make them. And the Coen brothers also were a part of this because they were in the same class and blah, blah, blah. And then it occurred to me, I was like, yeah, if you watch like Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness, but I feel like Evil Dead 2 is like where he started getting all his like special shots going on. You see that in the first Spider-Man movie.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much every other scene is another like, oh, this part from Evil Dead 2, this part from Army of Darkness.
Right.
You know, like the fast paced cuts with like the weird like reaction shots and shit like that. Same thing with Wes Craven in this film. You like see all that shit in like the rest of his movies.
Right. Yeah.
That said, this movie is kind of a mess, but it's very entertaining because it's like bonkers sometimes.
So
like, what the fuck?
I think this is really funny because they, the movie wants to. So this, I think it's really important to say that this movie was made in 1981. It was released in 1981. So I probably was shot late 70s. You know, early 80s.
Yeah. 80. So this basically came out the same time Evil Dead came out.
Interesting. Yeah. So I think it's also interesting just that the main premise of this is that like you have this Amish. This is when the Amish were kind of like lesser known in society, but were kind of just kind of percolating.
But they're not Amish. They're not Quakers either.
They're a little more extreme than Amish. They point out in the movie.
A different type, but they do have very Amish elements. Like, oh, they got a tractor and they're like, wow, if we had this thing. And it's like, right. Okay. Somebody drives a car at some one point. Right. And it's like, unfortunately it's a Ford Mustang. So dude's like driving it all bad and stuff. And it's, I don't know.
They're kind of like a weird kind of like way of, I don't know how to describe them. Like a way of living, a way of living, right? Because it's like religion-based, it's like society-based, it's like something they're born into. And I think at this point, they were so new that it was kind of like 1981 that they were kind of like, what is this? This is weird. But now we got, you and I grew up with like Kingpin and like, you know what I mean? Like Amish is kind of treated a little funny, right? Yeah. Like it's not as, it's more exposed than...
We're not... looking at them like they're fucking crazy anymore. It's like, no, right. We're just different people. Like,
classic American thought. Anything different is evil.
Not to mention, hopefully this doesn't really spoil anything. Not to mention, like, there's like a weird trans element too. There is.
So that predates the one of the most iconic trans.
Sleepaway Camp is after this?
Yep.
Interesting.
That is interesting. But, yep.
I want to say that movie also was not as...
This is also predates Witness. I don't know if you're a fan of Witness. Yeah. But also, so, it does predate it.
But specifically, Sleepaway Camp, I don't think it was like trying to poke fun at trans people. I think this one, I don't want to say it's poking fun at trans people, but it's just such a weird reveal.
I think... When we get into spoilers, I think that, yes. I think that they unnecessary. Are searching for a... shocking ending and there's a ton of shocking endings.
And I was like, wow, unnecessary. Yeah. Like in general, it doesn't matter what my beliefs are, which I have very strong beliefs about it, but I was like, didn't need to be a thing at all.
Well, real quickly, I don't know. I think you may have sounded more than me. When I was watching it, I was kind of like half paying attention. I'll be honest. I'll be half paying attention. I wasn't the biggest fan.
That's why I said,
because I feel like it's a little paced, very methodically, very slow paced movie. So as soon as we get to the end and there's a reveal, I was like, whoa, do I need to go back and watch this? Because was there hints or signs? Because there's some...
No, that's the thing. Right? Like, no.
Like, there wasn't.
It could have been more blatant, I think. And then it might have worked a little better, I guess.
Right.
You know, without spoiling things, I guess, just to be more... If there was like a real attraction, then just make it more obvious, I guess. Because like the subtle things that they were trying to do, it's like that's, you know, this could have just been a lonely person on like, you know, the middle of nowhere, Texas. Right.
I think.
Which, by the way, is Texas, which they don't ever mention.
It is. Yeah, I did read that. I think and I think this is where Wes Craven's direction comes in. This is a... for 1981, this is a female-led project.
Yeah.
Like, there's female leads throughout. There's, like, only females predominantly. Yeah. Besides, like, Ernest Borgnine and a few other male.
Simps dying. My fucking five-year review. Like,
yeah.
The dudes are dying left and right.
And
which is kind of cool.
I feel like this, despite the shock ending, and I think this has a lot to do with Wes Craven's direction. Maybe I'm giving too much credit. Maybe I'm not. I don't know the circumstance. But
I think you're right, though. I think we haven't really thought about, is Wes Craven the person that really brought the final girl to the forefront?
Yeah. He always, that's the thing I don't know if I said during our Scream review or not when we were talking about the movies, but he always has female leads.
Yes.
And yeah. He pays them much respect. Like, he doesn't treat them like as dumb
women they're that fucking need to strong and they're fucking.
Yeah, they're back, always. Yeah? Exactly.
Oh, so you're coming around. The new Scream movie sucked. Got it.
No. I actually really enjoyed it. I'm a screamer, by the way, guys. It's a bad name I made for myself. But I think that's his direction. I think he tries, even though it's kind of a weird twist, I think he gives it as much reality and dignity you can.
Right.
As possible. Because I don't think he's making fun of it. I don't think he's trying to shock it. It's just something that's there, which why it maybe lands a little weird. But I actually really like that you have three female leads in this. And moments, I think that they all kind of do okay. Like, they're not, like, exploited. They're not treated, like eye candy or treated any less. They're main characters in this movie.
With that said, most of the time I kept forgetting which one Sharon Stone was. And then on top of that, it's nice to see that she wasn't always this phenomenal fucking juggernaut of a fucking actor.
No, this is her first movie. Yeah, so to explain, this is
kind of bad a little bit.
A little trivia. This is Sharon Stone's first movie.
Because there was a lot of moments. I mean, for all of them, though. But I don't know if it's like there were scenes that were left on the cutting room floor. But I don't think so. There's just like these dramatic changes in tone and mood between the actors between cuts.
Yeah.
Specifically the main actress.
Yeah.
It was like kind of all over the place. It was kind of weird.
Out of the trio, I thought she was the weakest.
Yeah.
I really liked the Vicky character who ends up
having in the car, right?
Yeah. She starts talking to the brother.
The dude that played young Clark Kent in fucking Superman. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought.
Which, by the way, Cabby was a perfect fucking casting choice for, like, the lead Amish, whatever they are, guys. I call him Cabby. Cabby from Escape from New York.
Yeah.
He was
excellent, yeah.
And then making main dude from Hills Have Eyes be, like, a kind of dumb dude is a weird choice. But
I feel like.
But he fucking acted his ass off, and I was very impressed.
But I feel like even though he casts, like, to explain, like, I don't know if anybody's seen the Hills Have Eyes poster. Everyone sees the iconic Michael Berryman, his name, right? Michael Berryman, who has this kind of odd look. He's bald headed.
Because he's got alopecia. Don't slap me. Yeah, he's got alopecia. But he's got, like, extreme alopecia since, like, a kid. So he's got no hair on his body at all.
Right.
Not just like came late in life and let me fucking slap like a beloved actor on fucking.
He's kind of like a perfect guy to cast in horror movies, right?
Yeah.
And he shows up in a couple of he's worked with Wes Craven his filmography and stuff. But I feel like despite him being cast, like the other kids were kind of like funky too.
Yeah, they were. They were kind
of
weird.
They did a pretty interesting job of casting, the extras in this. I thought they were I guess extras is kind of like the supporting character.
You know what's kind of funny? So I don't think this spoils anything, but they also make that guy, what's his name?
Michael Berryman?
Michael Berryman. Yeah. You know, Hills Have Eyes guy, alopecia guy. They make him look like he's gonna be a pervert because he's like peeping Tomming like the main actress.
Right.
But whenever they cut back to him, it's not like he's getting all hot and bothered. It's just like he seems like he's in love And it's like a very interesting,
curious,
like, right? curious and kind of like in love, I would say.
Yeah.
Which to me is like such a testament to how good this actor really is. But we only see him as this one guy because of his appearance.
Yeah.
And I was like very impressed because I was like, man, they could have easily just made him like, oh, he's a fucking pervert. Gross.
Right. Yeah.
But it didn't feel that bad because that scene was also very long.
Like, yeah.
To a point where I was like, oh, my God. Like, OK, eventually they're going to make him seem really bad. And I was like, oh, no, he's fine. Like at one point he looks down. He's not even looking at her anymore. I was like, oh, OK, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally. I think that. Do you feel like we've done a good enough job of explaining what's going on in this plot?
I guess. I mean, it's not a very easy plot to explain. In general, so main actress husband dies pretty much immediately after she's being accosted by Michael Berryman for being an incubus.
She married into a guy who left the Amish,
quote-unquote Amish-ish cult. Which is not explained very well, but went to L.A. for his Rumspringer and like...
Married her,
came back. The family disowned him.
He decided to stay on the farm.
For reasons. And then she decided to stay on the farm
She also decided to stay despite there being murders in her barn.
Yeah, even though they're like, oh, what a terrible accident that this fucking tractor turned itself on and then like pinned him into a wall very slowly.
So, yeah, and then... two of her friends show up, Sharon Stone and the other girl.
Who was like, she was a lot of fun too.
Yeah. She was cool. I don't want you to think that we're seeing things that we enjoy, but like on the surface, this is not a bad movie. I don't want to paint this as a hidden gem. If you want a hidden gem, Wes Craven's, in my opinion, Serpent and the Rainbow, that's a hidden gem. That's a brilliant movie.
And apparently People Under the Stairs, because people nobody fucking knows that movie, but I'm very surprised by the way.
But it's like, this movie had a lot of stuff in it that like,
yeah.
We could kind of forgive, right? We're being forgiving a little bit.
Also because it's so batty sometimes that I thought it was like, oh, this is like very close to being like Tommy Wiseau fucking level of like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's funny to watch. I'm not going to say it's going to be a favorite.
No.
By no means. Yeah.
I don't want to paint it as this hidden gem, but because I think it's not the best made movie. I think that it's Wes Craven still figuring shit out.
Yeah.
You know,
but you do get to see like the building blocks of like, oh, the female lead, like the final girl.
He's not
quite as helpless. I mean, she fucking finds a gun.
She buys a gun.
She's like learning how to shoot it. There's like this fucking cool scene where she's with her friend and the friend shoots the gun and like it pushes her back. She's like, oh shit. Haha. She's like, oh, I did hit this thing after all, blah, blah, blah. Cause they thought she didn't hit the thing. And then like the final girl, like, she shoots like, let me hit the paint can, which is really a bag full of paint, I guess. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know. They tried their best here with set dressing, or props. And she hits it, and it's like this cool little like freeze frame thing where her like hands are in the air with the gun, and this thing is like being splattered out. And I was like, oh, that's fun.
Right.
Doesn't come too much into play later, but you know.
Yeah, and you know, I was actually really impressed with the other friend who ends up starting the relationship with the brother.
Yeah.
I thought that storyline... they could have easily exploited it, and she could have easily been the dumb blonde sex pot who just like seduces or manipulates another brother, right? But I think there's a honest general, like not general, but like honesty to the performance and the way it's written, to where you can actually buy the fact that like she's confident. You know, she meets a guy she finds attractive. Yeah. They talk. They have a good rapport with each other. They go on a date. It does not end well.
No.
They both die horribly.
Pretty much goes up in flames.
Goes up. Yeah, exactly. But I actually bought their relationship. Like, there's no, like...
I'm wondering if this is, like, you know, like, Wes Craven's fully aware, you know, of, like...
it has to be real, right?
Like, L.A. people, like, when L.A. people live here for a while and then they go to, like, a small town, they're like, oh, I think I really enjoy this because it's so different.
Right. You know? Yeah, that's true, too. That's a good point.
Because LA people aren't stupid, you know? Like, you gotta, like, either you stay here and, like, smarten up, or, you know, like, you fucking leave because you're like, God, this is too much.
And I think I think that either it was the acting or it was the direction or maybe a little bit of both, that they didn't cheapen it out. At no point did I feel like that they were being manipulative with that character. And I thought it was pretty honest. It's a very honest storyline throughout the thing, which easily could have been done very, like, exploitatively, right? Like, that she's just trying to manipulate this guy who's in this very deeply religious
way of living. Oh, that was something I had trouble with, though. So, like, the person he's supposed to, like, he's betrothed to or whatever the fuck.
Did they mention they were cousins? No. Or did I imagine that? I imagined that.
I don't remember.
Did I imagine that? You might have imagined that.
So, my thing was, like, he was like, oh, no, this city girl, she's super hot, which I'm like, yeah, she is very beautiful. But the person you're supposed to marry is also very fucking attractive, like, insanely beautiful.
there's not a dog in this movie, I'll say
that. No, not at all. I'm even going to say, so the person that plays the friend that's, like, the mom of the other girl that's weird. Louisa Stoller.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Her real name is Louise Nettleton.
Right.
Super beautiful woman. I initially was like, is this like Amy Poehler's mom? What's going on here?
Yeah.
And I couldn't get that out of my head the rest of the movie.
Cool.
Yeah, she was great. Anyway, yeah.
Cool. Did you want to have any last thoughts before we go to spoilers? We talk about the bizarro ending or whatever.
Let's do the bizarro ending because it doesn't make a lick of sense to me.
All right. We'll go to spoilers.
Yeah.
Wait. No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into...
spoilers. It's like the ending starts and it's like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. I'll forgive it. And then there's another ending. So,
like, to quickly explain, the Amish-like cult is obsessed with this idea of incubus.
Yeah.
This incubus creature. Incubus this, incubus that.
Cabby is telling people left and right.
Incubus. Yeah. It's like, okay, they were a good, like, pop band in the 2000s, but early aughts, but I don't know what that's relevant to this. But
you know, the Science album is probably one of the best incubus albums ever. So whatever. Anyway, yeah. Brandon Boyd's dad was a porn star, in case nobody knew that.
Cool. But yeah, so they feel there's a sense of evil wherever it is that they're living, and you kind of sense that they are applying it to this to the people that are our main characters, all these women that we're talking about, right? They're basically calling them incubus. That's the sense we get. But the twist of all twists is that the real evil, the hand, or what do they call it, the hand of the incubus, is actually the sort of
the daughter of
the daughter who's a little touched by his baby got hit by the horse. I don't know. I can't think of any nice farming metaphors to call them.
The daughter of the woman, I guess, that was supposed to be an older lady but looked the same fucking age.
She had another neighboring farm, right? Yeah.
And she was super nice to our main actress.
Right.
And they befriended each other. That's the person I said that looked like Amy Poehler a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Her daughter, which I didn't actually connect until the end.
Faith.
Yeah, Faith. I had no clue. I mean, I caught that a couple of times. I was like, how does she have a daughter that old? She looks fucking young. That her thing was like she would steal eggs and like give them to him.
Yeah. But she had that weird scene where she would bring over eggs and she was a little weird. And then she'd like... clearly, there is like a kind of sex scene before this, and we get the POV shot, and somebody's watching them, and then it's sort of hinted that like she's bouncing, she like helps herself into the house, gives them the eggs, wanders around the whole house to their bedroom and does like the bouncing on the bed, insinuating, in my opinion, that she witnessed them having sex. So from the earlier scene,
guess I missed that. Yeah, I don't know.
That's what I got from it, because I thought that was too, in my opinion, that was a little on the nose, just from movie watching, that she was almost like too pushy. I kind of figured Faith was the killer.
See, I didn't. Okay, I thought maybe she might have been one of the killers. I thought there might be several.
There was actually.
Totally called that. Amy Poehler mom was the other killer. So this is the only thing that makes sense.
We got the whodunit scream ending. We got two killers.
Because they really pushed that Cabby was like the killer. And
It seemed too hard. It was like
too much. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. For low key in the beginning, real quick, I thought that he was the brother. But that was
really, I thought it was going to be the brother too until he died. And I was like, okay, there you go.
It kind of, that whole storyline played out. So I was like, he died. But yeah, I figured the only other option would be these people, unless there's like a Deus Ex Machina of another fucking random character, like the sheriff or any of these other fucking
people. Like that girl from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood that's like 5'4". Kills Dewey. Sure.
Yeah. Spoiler.
Yeah. But does not.
So let's talk about the big elephant in the room. You want to talk about the big elephant in the room about how...
So Faith is a forced trans person.
Yes.
And even says out loud, I'm sorry, I'm not a good girl or whatever. I tried. I was like, that's fucking weird. Like, this is clearly early 80s, late 70s type of film.
That hit weird.
Yeah.
In this modern time, like, you know, we're both like socially conscious guys, so like seeing something like this in this context is like, it's a little alarming. It's kind of upsetting, like just how clumsily they try to throw in this to make, like, I feel like this is, and this is where I feel like one of the faults in the movie, they only put this in here because it's weird.
There's
no like reason it should be here, right?
Which I don't want to defend Sleepaway Camp too much, even though it's one of my favorite films.
Right.
But I feel like that entire film is about identity anyway. So it's, you know.
It kind of like mirrors the plot. Yeah.
But this movie, this was just like a random, like, let's throw this in. So it's like, whoa. It's like, no, this is fucked up. Like, there is no reason for that.
It's only, it feels like it's only in place to shock.
Yeah.
Because we see that once we get the reveal of the killers, our main character tussles with Faith or whatever, and they wrestle a bit, and for whatever reason, her shirt pops open, Faith's shirts pop open, and she has a hairy chest. And you realize that, and then she reveals that, like, you know, that she's a man.
Yeah. Which, serves no purpose to the plot.
It was just there to shock.
Yeah. She could have just been in love with her. And it could have been left at that.
Right.
You know, obsessed with her. That's it.
And honestly, I was really excited by that prospect, because after I had already kind of clued in the fact that Faith was the killer, that I was really excited. I was like, fuck, Wes Craven. He did amazing. He has all these females in this movie. Yeah. There's no dudes, which is fucking great. For a movie set in 1981, there's no like male protagonist at all, which is fucking great. It was like, man, Wes Craven's like breaking the mold here, you know?
Until that happened.
But yeah, he clumsily adds a very odd trans plot here.
Hashtag cancel Wes Craven.
He's canceled. I'm ready to cancel him.
Yeah. No, he was trying to do something, and I mean, I don't appreciate it, but I understand, I guess. But it served nothing to the plot.
The only thing that kind of like, and this is me in like, insinuate, I don't know for sure, for a fact, but maybe because it was small town life, they're trying to portray small town life as odd, right? Like one of our favorite movies, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like that movie is about odd, weird family, right? And maybe they're trying to hit the wellness. Maybe, again, like, I'm just insinuating, but like, I don't know if that's even what they were thinking.
Maybe we're looking at this all wrong. And this Amish community that we think he was like kind of shitting all over, he's actually trying to portray as like, hey, none of their business. They don't give a shit. They don't narc. They knew, because clearly they knew this was a boy at birth, like, was raised by this woman, became a woman, don't care, none of their business.
But the only thing I'll say to that is that we actually, and then the weirder part happens.
Yes.
And where we actually get an actual quote-unquote incubus.
I was a little,
for reasons,
pissed about that a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, we literally get stupid. Some sort of, like, devilish creature come up from the ground and take our main character to hell? To,
I guess. Because, something. Like, the hints you get about it, like, people, the other girls having dreams about it.
Mm-hmm. Sharon Stone. Sharon Stone's having dreams
Sharon's
about
dream. Yeah, Sharon Stone, she gets a little fucked up about it, too.
Right.
She also saves the day, and then, ironically, the betrothed woman to the brother also saves the day. And then, because Cabby comes on and says, like, the incubus is dead, she like drops her like angry killing thing going on. Like, she's like on a murder spree.
Well, she says the messenger of incubus is dead.
So that's, so she just drops, like, oh, we saved the day. But yeah, I don't know about
that. Was weird. That was like another weird,
because it was also her dead husband comes back, is warning her, and it's like,
yeah, in
real late, because it's literally seconds before she gets sucked into the ground. Like, it that doesn't, like, make any sense.
Like, it literally was like, Martha, put girls on incubus.
Warning, warning, warning. Oh, sorry, too late. Gotta go. Bye. Get sucked into the ground.
Yeah. It was weird.
Yeah. I didn't
understand the ending of this movie. I get that they're trying to say that this odd, strict, religious Amish people are different, but they're not the actual evil. There was something actually weird about this house.
So I guess we can also say, like, it wasn't the bad person's fault that they were forced to be trans, which is also problematic. I don't know.
Again, like, I think the whole, that's the one thing that really sticks in my craw. Like, the fact that they just threw that in there when they could have, like, I don't care if they do that. Right.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't bother me, but like, But you got to explain it. You got to, like, justify it throughout your plot. You know what I mean? Like, instead of portraying her as sort of just this, you know, touched or kicked in the head daughter. I don't want to use the word she used, because I think she used the word.
Yeah.
The R word. Yeah. But so, I think that, like, they could have developed that better. Instead of portraying her that way, they could have hinted. They could have maybe something, fleshed that storyline out.
Or just not do that at all.
But Yep, that's true. Yeah.
Didn't make any sense to me.
It didn't. But I get, yeah. Because then it insinuates that there's something wrong with it, which I think is why I have a problem with it.
Yes.
Yeah. That's somebody who is.
And this is why they're a bad person.
Right. Exactly.
That's what it felt like.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a very old way. So that was the thing that kind of, like, was upsetting about
it. So Wes Craven, thank you, because you're, like, strong females, but identity, you're not up to speed with.
In 1981, he was not. But I don't think anybody was. I don't think anybody was ready. I don't think anybody's ready now. So let's be completely fair. Nobody's really ready for that conversation.
Yeah, nobody's ready. You know, we live in America. You can be whoever you want to be, unless it affects your religious beliefs.
I don't know. We can get into a whole spiel about that. But yeah, like, people's identities is like, we all are in search of our own identities. Yeah. You know what I mean? Whatever that means, whatever that is. Right. So that was a little tough to watch in, like, our 2022 context and then watching it.
Because I would have said, like, this movie's, like, worth a watch because it's kind of funny. Until that happened, I was like, fuck this movie. Yeah. I don't know. It's not great.
It didn't sit well with you then?
No, not really.
I totally get that. Cool.
Did you hear that coughing?
I did not. Don't break the illusion.
Yeah, no. Our other guest isn't here either.
Incubus.
Alrighty. We're going long, but this is good. We're experimenting for show working together. Yeah. Okay. Do you have any last thoughts or do you want to go to just ratings?
Just go to ratings. Fuck it.
Yeah. All right. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones.
No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm gonna give
Deadly Blessings 3 very limp bones.
I just realized you said 3.
Yeah.
I think I went too high.
It's not good.
It's not. I think we've had a good conversation about it, but I don't think it's as good as we're talking about.
No. I mean, there's elements, like we said, that like are important to later films, but it's not a good movie.
I think if you're a Wes Craven completionist, this is a film you know you're gonna have to watch and go through, and there's things to like about it. Okay, so real quickly, the one thing we didn't explain is we have that in Nightmare on Elm Street we had the shower scene with the main character where she you see the hand. Glove.
Yeah, we get the snake in this one.
Now we get the snake in this one. Yeah.
Which didn't make a whole lot of sense. I feel like the glove, because like it's Freddy in a nightmare, right?
Yeah.
The snake is like slithering around in a bathtub that's actually a shower, which bothered me, by the way.
Yeah.
But there's like this bathtub that's also a shower.
Yeah, she has a bath and a shower, which is totally weird and dirty.
Yeah, there's like a lot of like weird, like, it's gross moments.
Yeah.
But yeah, the snake, which was like a very large snake, and the bathtub is not very big, but she's like confused about it for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, no, that was the one echoing shot you see in the it's classic Nightmare on Elm Street. So I'm going to give it a little bit. Did I enjoy it? I'm going to give it a 5 sexy spooky bones. I think there's some good stuff about it. I thought the movie as a whole doesn't work. Mm-mm. But I think there's things about it that are worth talking about, worth looking at. But
for me, it's that first ending is just a little too upsetting. I was like, oh
yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. I think the ending is very I don't know what's easy word, problematic. Yes. Is that the easy way to say it? Yeah, I agree.
As soon as that happened, I was like, oh man, this was like gonna be a 5 for me, and then it just dropped.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But yeah, if you want, yeah, 5, okay,
I'll go to 5.
Yeah,
I think it's interesting, very least. Sure, cool. All right, guys and gals and non-binary pals, thank you for listening, and as always,
stay spooky.
We're never doing this again.
Skeleton crew, it's time. The boys say goodbye. We love all of you. We really have to go poo. We'll miss you, but it's time for us to